I'm John O'Loughlin. Welcome to McDuff Lives Podcast. He's sending this virus out into places where deer and all kinds of little animals are going to catch it. And then when we go hunting or we go into the woods and we get infected, what are you going to do about that? Well, first thing we have to do is recognize the amazing problem that we face. And hello, everyone. I'm John O'Loughlin. Welcome to my channel. It's called McDuff Lives. And today we are continuing our reading. We're at part 8, which is chapter 9 of A.W. Finnegan's book, The Sleeper Agent. And let's remind everybody, the subtitle of the book is The Rise of Lyme Disease, Chronic Illness, and the Great Imitator Antigens of Biological Warfare. Okay. Chapter 9, The Serpent Strikes, The Stealth Bioterrorism of Dr. Eric Traub. This is a very serious chapter, guys. And to me, I don't like to read it because it really tells us bad news. There's bad news in this chapter, guys. So hold on to your seats. Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power, says Abraham Lincoln at the top of our reading today. On April 19, 1949, Eric Traub arrived in the United States for a high-level position under the U.S. Navy, working at the Naval Medical Research Institute, NMRI, in Bethesda, Maryland, coordinating with the USDA, that's the Department of Agriculture, of course, and the U.S. Army, assisting in field studies on anti-animal agents. As a supervisory bacteriologist and virologist working on a diverse range of biological agents. An official at the Institute certified his entry and contract with the Institute, describing his importance to the United States Navy. He would, quote, conduct investigations on virological research with such viruses as that of lymphocytic chorioamnionitis and equine encephalomyelitis. He will, with his additional background as a graduate veterinarian, assume the responsibility of specific diseases and problems as they arise in the animal colonies of the NMRI. The following month, Traub had a report presented in Bern, Switzerland, at the 1949 Conference on Foot and Mouth Disease, FMD, for the Food and Agriculture Organization. That, of course, is the UN body, FAO. And the FAO presented his data on egg-adapted FMD virus. Traub had been advising the Swiss government following his escape from East Germany and traveled to Switzerland in 1948, the year before his return to America. 2 months after his arrival, Traub's German Inselrheim studies of Newcastle disease virus and virus N-A, or N with the A where you put the exponent, virus N is designated N for negative, meaning it produced no antibodies. So Traub had been advising the Swiss government. Also interesting, isn't it, with the relationship between the Swiss government and the Nazis still very unclear to us, but suspicious. 2 months after his arrival, Traub's German Inselrheim studies of Newcastle disease virus and virus NA from World War II with Gerhard Schramm and Werner Schaefer were completed and published as a 1949 paper, quote, studies on the virus of atypical avian influenza. These studies were mostly done in 1943 and 1944 under the Reich, but the interruption of Soviet occupation delayed its completion until 1949. In this paper, they began to characterize each component of the virus and its antigens. This work was building off Traub's earlier work with Gottfried Pyl and Hubert Mühlmann on FMD, that's foot and mouth disease, with the expertise of Schramm, who had been known for his work on the tobacco mosaic virus. By 1951, according to a declassified intelligence report from 1952, released to this author, referring to the state of microbiological research in West Germany around that time, one section mentions the work of Schaefer and Schramm already in the early phases of more modern genetic engineering that would have been made during the days of Inselrheims in a classified setting for the German Reich. What alarms us in this instance, however, is that both Schramm and Schaefer were still in contact with their former Insel Reims colleagues in the Soviet zone. Uh-oh. This is a quote. Recent work has covered the splitting of the tobacco mosaic virus, a study of the pieces, and their recombination, isolation, and characterization of Newcastle disease virus and molecular of tobacco mosaic virus. Both Schramm and Schaefer, before the end of World War II, worked at the Reich Research Institute, Reichsforschungsanstalt, Insel Reims, and are still in contact with members of the Reims group, unquote. There is another mention in this report which brings up an interesting parallel to one of Erich Traub's former associates, Professor Kurt Herzberg, from the University of Greifswald, which fell under Soviet occupation with Insel Reims at the end of World War II. Herzberg, the reader may recall, was involved in experiments infecting canaries with infectious hepatitis and influenza research, which was brought up in connection with biological warfare. The report reveals that Professor Herzberg was allowed to casually pack up and leave the Eastern Zone under Soviet occupation with the blessings of the government, even giving a farewell lecture before heading to West Germany. It was also thought by some that he was sent as a scientific fifth columnist for the Soviet Union. Traub's escape was equally suspect. No suspicions were apparent to Traub's Navy superiors, however, because just 6 months into Traub's position at the Navy, he received a favorable security progress report. Their assessment was that he posed no danger to the national security of the United States and had a great attitude and work ethic. The Navy was obviously satisfied with the results he was producing on research and development in biological weapons. Despite this favorable security review, according to Pentagon animal disease specialist Frank A. Todd, interviewed by the FBI in April of 1950, Erich Traub not only maintained contact with a group of his former associates in West Germany, but he maintained contact with his former Insel Reims associates still in the Soviet zone. Several others interviewed by the FBI, such as some of his former Rockefeller associates like Carl Tenbruck, among others, deemed Traub a definite security risk. Tenbruck was not the only one among Traub's old Rockefeller colleagues voicing a dislike of Traub, though Richard E. Shope, on the other hand, spoke of Traub in the highest of terms and with great respect and admiration. Once at the Naval Institute, Traub immediately went to work on more than 40 pathogens in the realm of viruses, rickettsia, and bacteria, which had been noted by the Navy when his assistant, Annelise Bierger, was approved to come to American shores to assist Traub. Once at the Naval Institute, Traub immediately went to work on more than 40 pathogens in the realm of viruses, rickettsia, and bacteria, which had been noted by the Navy when his assistant, Annelise Bierger, was approved to come to American shores to assist Traub. It is highly probable that Traub produced several strains of simulant germs or tracers for use in American tests, such as Serratia marchesans or marchesans, as he often used Serratia marchesans in earlier experimental research to demonstrate factors about viruses like their size and filterability. He also refers to vaccinia virus in comparison to his Navy studies of Newcastle disease virus to grow in cell-free extracts of different kinds of blood. Both vaccinia virus and Serratia marchesans were cleared for use as standard simulants. We have already discussed in earlier chapters how Traub weaponized Serratia marchesans, formerly called Bacillus prodigiosus, with bovine papular stomatitis virus in 1940, a pox virus related to the virus of smallpox and vaccinia. Additionally, Traub began a series of experiments on Newcastle disease virus for the Navy with Worth I. Capps, CAPPS, as his assistant. These were very detailed, complex studies on the immune responses and growth of Newcastle disease virus in the presence of different immune cells, completing several papers by 1951. Due to Traub's expertise with FMD, which became one of many effective covers for biological weapons work on Insel Reims, the same would be true for Plum Island. Traub was the godfather of Plum Island, as it had been structured after his descriptions of the setup at Insel Reims, equipped with production facilities and chicken farms nearby, as back in Germany. not far from Plum Island in Glastonbury, Connecticut, right next to Old Lyme, a large chicken farm. Arbor Acres produced and supplied large quantities of chickens and eggs since World War II and may have been supplying eggs and chickens to the USDA. It was later bought by Nelson Rockefeller in 1960. However, some years before this, and after Traub's second tenure in America, Arbor Acres, among many other chicken farms, convened with the Agricultural Research Service, the ARS, to take part in special conferences by the USDA on the pathogen Mycoplasma gallisepticum. And it was such a problem infecting turkeys, chickens, and contaminating eggs that eradicating it was out of the question. It is more than likely that the rise in disease was the result of Traub's live Newcastle disease vaccines and tests around the country with Newcastle disease virus feather bombs, which had dropped from high altitudes laced with chicken blood infected with the virus. The Americans conducted field experiments on and around the island, as Traub had done on Reims and over foreign territory. Traub had the necessary skill, experience, and expertise to supervise biological warfare tests that mirror the tests he conducted in Germany. Kurt Bluma, the Nazi doctor in charge of biological warfare for Heinrich Himmler, revealed in earlier interviews with the Counterintelligence Corps that the Reich conducted field experiments with anti-crop insects like potato beetles dropped from planes. And translations of historical essays on Enzel Reims revealed the ongoing facilitation of FMD and Rinderpest weapons. Not to mention, Traub was likewise well-equipped to supervise airborne tests with airborne pathogens. As the reader might recall that early in Traub's education in veterinary medicine, his first thesis investigated the hygiene of animal stalls in animal houses, with a special focus on the air of the animal stalls. This would bring with it noteworthy experience working with airborne germs and the movement of air in certain environments. He was gaining experience with this kind of work just prior to the time that the Germans were accused of conducting clandestine airborne germ warfare tests with Serratia marcescens bacteria in the subways of London and Paris. Serratia marcescens was the, at the time, thought mostly non-pathogenic, but was used in open-air experiments as a simulation of how pathogenic bacteria would spread out in a given environment to show how extensive a real attack would be. In later chapters, we will cover American simulant testing activities in further depth. These factors were relevant and form a part of the reason Traub was chosen as, among other duties, a supervisory bacteriologist for the American military to supervise bacterial simulant tests listed in the JIOA, that's the Joint Intelligence Objectives Agency, file on Eric Traub. Agents pathogenic to humans that were weaponized with antigens from FMD would also fall under the cover of agricultural research, similar to how the variants adapted to mice and chicken eggs were hidden under defense against FMD and tested effectively as airborne mists by the Reich on Enzel Reims when freeze-dried, as well as carried by insects. It was known that mouse passages increased the neurotropic qualities for humans, and adapting it to chicken eggs could have been the method for equally adapting it to humans due to the similarities between the avian and human immune systems. During World War II and the years leading up to Traub's return, British, Canadian, and American personnel used Plum Island in the Long Island Sound of New York, as well as Horn Island off the coast of Mississippi, and a number of other state agricultural experiment stations around the United States to conduct tests on anti-animal agents, with Horn Island and possibly Plum Island having worked on live agents such as brucellosis and anthrax during the war. The State Department then passed legislation to use Plum Island, then known as Fort Terry, to conduct work on animal diseases that could also infect humans, such as FMD virus, vesicular stomatitis virus, brucellosis, Newcastle disease virus, mycoplasma, among others. We know that this legislation was passed with the intention that Traub would be working there if he were brought to American shores, because during the hearing, which took place in January of 1948, a reference was made to Traub without directly naming him. It was during testimony with the subcommittee on foot and mouth disease of the Committee on Agriculture between Congressman Ernest Bramblett of California and lead scientist from the University of California, Dr. Jacob Traum, who would become one of Plum Island's early lead scientists. This is a quote from the Congressional Record. Mr. Bramlett, I'm rather disturbed a little bit, but I am happy that you are in it actively because I understand we lost one of the other top world experts. He came into the American occupational zone in Germany and offered to give himself up, and he did, and they immediately took him back and gave him to one of the other countries. And since then, we have not heard very much about him, if anything. Dr. Traum, quote, yes, he is back in the Russian zone. Mr. Bramlett, you do not hear very much from him or what he is doing there, do you? Dr. Traum, no, I think they are trying to put him to work there without any equipment. That's what I understand. I've not been there, so what I tell you is just hearsay. There is no doubt that this is a direct reference to Traub, because he had indeed offered himself to work for the United States, filled out a questionnaire with the veterinarian William A. Hagen, and because of his Nazi Party affiliations, they gave him back. He returned to the Soviet zone, and at that time, work at Insel Reims had come to a complete halt due to Stalin having his army disassemble and haul off the entire laboratory to Russia. In Michael Christopher Carroll's book on Plum Island, Lab 257, the disturbing story of the government's secret Plum Island germ laboratory, for example, he cites an unnamed source who worked at Plum Island in the early 1950s, confirming that Traub was indeed at the island conducting experiments with ticks. Quote, a source who worked on Plum Island in the 1950s recalls that animal handlers and a scientist released ticks outdoors on the island. Quote, they called him the Nazi scientist when they came in 1951. They were inoculating these ticks, unquote. And a picture he once saw, quote, shows the animal handler pointing to the area on Plum where they released the ticks, unquote. Well, that's pretty close to a smoking gun, I'd say. Further into the book, the former Plum Island director, J.J. Callis, inadvertently shoots himself in the foot, admitting to Carroll that from the early days they maintained tick colonies and had reinstated the tick colonies at the time of his interview. In parallel to what Carroll brought forth in his book, the research done for this book will also show for the record that according to a 1953 University of Maryland thesis paper, by Andrew J. Rogers, quote, a study of the ixodid ticks of northern Florida, including the biology and life history of Ixodes scapularis in 1951, tests and experiments with the black-legged tick were common occurrences at that time, and the USDA had been collecting them routinely under their annual surveys. Interestingly, it was not a known transmitter of any human disease back in 1945. Additional tests with insects through agricultural and military activities with mosquitoes can also be established as a common occurrence during this time. Plum Island was indeed breeding mosquitoes, evident in a later publication from Mosquito News, quote, Aedes atropellopus breeding in artificial containers in Suffolk County, New York, where a mosquito survey was conducted on Plum Island, and abandoned tires still dotted the landscape from earlier tests on Aedes atropalpus, infected with the agent of Eastern equine encephalitis, Venezuelan equine encephalitis, and avian malaria, Plasmodium gallinaceum. This would indicate that Traub and the military personnel were supervising additional tests with avian malaria. Traub did mention avian malaria in one of his Navy papers on Newcastle disease virus in different types of blood, citing the growth of it outside its normal growing conditions as a promising field for future research. Additionally, he cites numerous additional insects like avian mites and lice on top of salt marsh mosquitoes as insects that transmit EEE. Since Traub was an expert on EEE, it would be unfathomable for him not to have considerable experience with insects. Additional references to his work on tick-borne diseases can be found in the Navy's approval to hire his former Insel Reims technical assistant, Anneliese Berger. Berger was approved for work on American shores under contract with Naval Research Institute to assist Traub in matters of biological warfare, with an impressive resume in biological research, including rickettsia, a tick-borne disease. Quote, during the Duties of the position to be filled by Ms. Berger are concerned with the supervision of maintenance of approximately 40 strains of virus and rickettsias in cereal, egg, and animal passages in order to provide stocks of infectious materials for experimental work in the virology division and other divisions of the Naval Medical Research Institute, unquote. There are, as of yet, no records showing that Berger ever actually made it to the United States, because much of Traub's published research for the Navy lists Worth I. Capps as his technical assistant. Berger is never mentioned, nor thanked in any of his American publications, as well as the fact that Berger published a research paper with Bernard Schneider in 1951, when she had been approved in November of 1950. She published a follow-up paper with Schneider the same year, with her name changed to Anneliese Schneider, indicating she married Bernard Schneider and stayed at Beringwerke AG. It is a good probability more will be discovered at a later time, but probably not until after this book has been published. What is significant in Berger's file, however, is that it is here we find a direct reference to the tick-borne disease class of bacteria, Rickettsia, tying a direct link to Eric Traub's Navy work because, essentially, she was to be conducting these tests for Eric Traub, working as his technical assistant. Moreover, this same document establishes for the record that there were no scientists skilled enough in America to replace the work she and Traub were doing. And this will become significant when we discuss Willy Bergdorfer's role. It states, quote, "In view of past long association in the fields of bacteriology and virology with Dr. Eric Traub, whom she will assist at the Institute, Ms. Berger's assignment here cannot be adequately filled by any personnel available in the United States," unquote. In Traub's declassified intelligence file from the Navy, it is once more emphasized that Traub's skill and expertise in biological warfare preparations were unmatched by anyone available in the United States. Quote, "Dr. Traub is an eminent virologist and an authority on matters pertaining to biological warfare. His assignment to the Naval Medical Research Institute will fulfill an urgent need that cannot be met by personnel available in the United States. His probable knowledge of preparations for biological warfare in other countries renders mandatory every effort to secure his services," unquote. The FBI file on Eric Traub shows that in April 1950, he went to Washington, D.C., to attend a meeting with the National Research Council, the NRC, and could be contacted through B.T. Sims, a USDA official who was involved with the research at Plum Island, whose name will come up in later chapters. However, it is here we can establish that Eric Traub was working for the USDA during his employment with the Navy. At any rate, the National Research Council was set up during war activities and put together scientific foundations which were geared towards national defense. It appears Traub was there to attend meetings and convene on the veterinary disease branch, headed by USDA officials Traub coordinated with. Additional records indicate that other branches of the NRC that worked with the Army Chemical Corps, like the Chemical Biological Coordination Center, were focused on testing insecticides and concentrated in studies of avian malaria, indicating these were part of the animal disease tests going on at the time. In February 1951, the FAO requested Traub's assistance in Colombia to control an outbreak of FMD and to run an FMD laboratory for the Colombians and FAO in Bogota. He left for several months and was planning to return in midsummer, but returned in early September, just in time to supervise simulant tests around Plum Island as a supervisory bacteriologist and virologist for the Navy, simultaneously an employee of the USDA and the FAO. And it appears this may have been done with the cooperation of the Long Island Biological Association, who was under contract with the Army Chemical Corps steadily from October 1950 to October 1952. It is interesting to note Traub would be back and forth between Bogota and the United States in parallel with the migratory bird patterns. In other words, he would travel to Bogota as the birds were getting ready to migrate north, and travel north to the United States just as the birds were getting ready to fly south. And this is demonstrated on an infographic that shows the migratory bird patterns between North and South America. During Traub's work in Colombia with FMD, Schaefer sends Traub cultures of FMD that had originally been given to him by Traub after his escape from West Germany. In further experiments with these cultures, Traub mentions that in the process of their experiments, the cultures had become so heavily contaminated with a certain kind of bacteria that even heavy doses of penicillin and streptomycin failed to eliminate them. This would not be surprising for contamination with spirochetes, though he never mentions what the contaminating bacteria actually was. Tests with FMD and anti-animal agents were initiated in the fall of 1951 on Plum Island, and he would supervise bacterial simulant tests reaching across the United States, as well as those on crops, such as tests in the Midwest. Traub also had a hand in the testing of Newcastle disease virus in October that year over chicken farms owned by the University of Wisconsin. A 1958 security investigation by the FBI can place Eric Traub on Plum Island and listed as an employee of the Greenport, Long Island, New York Agricultural Experiment Station, which is Plum Island. He was also at the Beltsville, Maryland Agricultural Experiment Station for the Agricultural Research Service of the USDA, working as an employee of the ARS when it was established in 1953, formerly known as the Bureau of Animal Industry. Traub worked on vesicular stomatitis virus, a virus that is one of the differential diagnoses to FMD. As the reader may recall, avian spirochetosis likewise served as the differential diagnosis to Newcastle disease. Traub entered the testing phase for his work on vesicular stomatitis in 1950, working with L.O. Mott, a top USDA official who worked with the Bureau of Animal Industry in 1950, which became the ARS. Mott worked extensively on the anaplasmosis and tick fever program that the USDA had been running, and they were supplied ticks from the University of Florida's tick farm, and the black-legged tick was a prime candidate since it wasn't known as a transmitter of human disease. After Traub's second run on American shores, the black-legged tick would be a primary vector for some of the country's most tormenting infectious diseases. My source, John Loftus, was the first to expose the Lyme disease connection to biological warfare in 1982 in the Belarus Secret, and even noted it was being spread by ticks before it was publicly acknowledged, and the Plum Island experiments had been directed and overseen by one of our allies in British intelligence, a man named Donald MacLean, a confirmed double agent for the Soviet intelligence when he defected to Moscow in 1951. Now quoting from Loftus, a few months after it appeared in my book, scientists employed by the U.S. government published a report that confirmed that Lyme disease was indeed being spread by ticks. However, other government officials lied and denied any American tick experiments ever took place on Plum Island. It was a half-lie to conceal a sensitive political scandal. The Plum Island experiments had been carried out by one of our allies in British intelligence, a man named Donald MacLean. He was confirmed as a double agent for Soviet intelligence when he defected to Moscow in 1951. Donald MacLean had been instrumental in the formation of joint agreements between Britain, Canada, and the United States to share research and collaborate on nuclear, chemical, and biological development and testing, and all top-secret information relevant to it. MacLean was also appointed head of Chancery at the British Embassy in Cairo, Egypt, a geographic location that would become significant as an intermediary area for biological warfare research taking place in Africa under the Navy's special unit, NAMRU 3. John Loftus is here saying that MacLean was directing these tests, though not actually the one physically conducting the experiments. This was being done by other scientists after World War II under his direction. And it was Eric Traub who supervised these tests when he came to America under Operation Paperclip, which Loftus revealed in the Belarus Secret in 1982. And this is a quote. Even more disturbing are the records of the Nazi germ warfare scientists who came to America. They experimented with poison ticks dropped from planes to spread rare diseases. I received some information suggesting that the U.S. tested some of these poison ticks on the Plum Island artillery range off the coast of Connecticut during the early 1950s. I explored the old spies hypothesis that the poison ticks were the source of the Lyme disease spirochete and that migrating waterfowl were the vectors that carried the ticks from Plum Island all up and down the eastern seaboard. Most of the germ warfare records have been shredded, but there is a top secret U.S. document confirming that, quote, clandestine attacks on crops and animals, unquote, took place at this time. The Lyme disease outbreak in America was monitored secretly under the cover of a New England Health study. And that is the close of that quote from John Loftus. Their extensive expeditions collecting and cataloging ticks and various arthropods, along with disease agents passing between the insects and hosts, such as the fowl tick, Argus persica, a natural host to the agent of avian spirochetosis, Borrelia and Serena. NAMRU 3 worked closely with the University of Cairo, and both NAMRU 3 and the University of Cairo joined in researching agents like avian spirochetosis, having also worked closely with the University of California and the USDA. Many years earlier, in 1938, ticks and insects like biting flies were researched at Enzel Reims for their potential to spread FMD, published as, quote, the significance of insects and ticks for the epidemiology of foot and mouth disease. A second paper, quote, the epizootic significance of rats, game, birds, and insects for the spread of foot and mouth disease, unquote, was also published. In these papers, they admit the tick is a long-term carrier of FMD, claiming negative results in transmitting the disease to guinea pigs, but say nothing of testing it in cattle. They equally downplayed its significance in the wild animals and birds, though admit that birds can sometimes act as carriers. The paper also doubted the significance in the biting flies and ticks, even as they are long-term carriers. These few papers may have been intentionally misleading to deflect attention and downplay their significance in order to cloak some of their military research. I say this because their earlier results at Enzel Reims were contradicted much later. Multiple hazards in the spread of FMD had been identified by the FAO by 1994, according to an FAO publication, quote, foot and mouth disease, sources of outbreaks, and hazard categorization of modes of virus transmission, unquote. Ticks had been listed as a high hazard in the spread of the virus. Traub's work at Enzel Reims adapting FMD virus to mice and chicken eggs would also bring updated mutations and new qualities with new potential in both ticks and wild animals. Eric Traub's tick weapons and weaponized Lyme disease. Sometime during Traub's return to American shores, putting his talents to use for the American military and their cooperation with Britain and Canada, weaponized pathogens and insects were unleashed on the very countries Traub was supposed to be helping. This will become more evident in the following chapters. On its face, researchers would face extreme difficulty pasting together the history of Traub's expertise on ticks and tick-borne disease, as the evidence is very well hidden, scattered in obscure places, and in the German language. However, the truth will become more evident as I walk the reader through the stages that blessed these weapons with the expertise and signature of Eric Traub. We will start with lymphocytic chorioamnionitis virus, LCM. When Traub discovered the LCM virus, it was at a time when he realized he could awaken sleeping viruses already within the host with a foreign protein or concentrated antigens suspended in broth and injected into a mouse's brain. This caused a septic shock that awakened LCM virus from dormancy already in the mice, activating it and spreading it to the other mice and the animal keepers who worked at the institute, causing an epidemic from scratch. As this occurred, he noticed that after the initial illness or fever period in which the mice are visibly ill, it would recede for a time, but it damaged the mouse's immune system, causing a persistent chronic infection with little to no antibodies. This also brought on additional infections with other bacteria like mycoplasma as mixed infections. The mothers with damaged immune systems would then pass the LCM virus to their newborns. And these mice were always born infected without antibodies or noticeable signs of disease, but they came down with chronic neurodegenerative diseases later in life. They could spread virulent LCM virus without any sign of disease. Cancer would also rise in the infected colonies. He later realized that the lipid portions in the surface proteins of the virus allow for it to damage the immune system and mutate itself rapidly to escape the immune system defenses. This agent, an antigen or lipoprotein, found on the surface of certain pathogens would later be synthesized as a biochemical adjuvant called PAM3CYS, or P3C. P3C would mimic the effect of agents carrying this lipid portion to affect the immune system in the same damaging manner by stimulating certain receptors of the immune system. This is also found on the outer surface proteins of the Lyme disease agent, Borrelia burgdorferi. Eventually, what he discovered was baptized immune tolerance, but he was not credited for it, and the Nobel Prize was given to two other scientists much later for what Traub discovered, which we will cover in later chapters. It is called immune tolerance because the immune system is suppressed and forced to tolerate harmful pathogens it should be keeping out of the body. And these pathogens then integrate into the central nervous system and brain, the core of our physical being. When Traub returned to Germany to accept a position at the University of Gießen under Professor Dr. Karl Beller in 1938, by 1939, Traub became well-versed in tick-borne diseases and those that could be transmitted by hard-bodied ticks like Rickettsia ruminantium, which is closely related to the tick-borne disease and common Lyme co-infection, human monocytic ehrlichiosis, as well as the co-infecting blood parasites like Babesia, which causes human babesiosis. He was taught about a complex disease condition that had been seen in dogs sick with a mix of infections, like Babesia, Ehrlichia, Bartonella, and Leishmaniasis. With the exception of Leishmania, these were transmitted by hard-bodied ticks that do not feed on humans. But it served as an important animal model for a human biological weapon. We know Traub was versed in the expertise because he was working directly under Beller at this time when Beller was putting the chapter together for the textbook. Beller showed Traub how this mix of infections caused a similar condition as the immune tolerance seen in his Rockefeller mice. How complex and challenging it became for diagnosis for the average physician and veterinarian when multiple mixed infections produced multiple overlapping diseases simultaneously with little to no antibodies. It was also shown that the genus of relapsing fever spirochetes could occasionally be transmitted by hard-bodied ticks like the brown dog tick, which is not a nuisance to humans. With a few modifications, however, Traub could easily adapt the spirochete to take to a hard-bodied tick that feeds on humans, such as the Ixodes ticks or the Amblyomma ticks, that's A-M-B-L-Y-O-M-M-A, and Ixodes is I-X-O-D-E-S. Those are two different kinds of ticks. Likewise, other German researchers from Berlin had found the avian spirochete could even be transmitted by Culex, C-U-L-E-X, mosquitoes. The same year, Traub became focused on the study of viral disease of birds under his German mentor. Likewise, he had to be well-versed in all of the differential diagnoses of these avian diseases so he could tell the viral diseases he specialized in apart from other diseases that produced similar symptoms. Only an expert could tell them apart. He became especially fluent in the science of avian influenza, also called foul plague virus, and later to become an expert in its close relatives Newcastle disease virus and virus N. When Professor Beller had Traub take Werner Schaefer under his wing the same year, Traub had him procure a strain of the spirochetes that caused avian spirochetosis. From Rockefeller-founded psychiatrist Franz Janel, a spirochete expert at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. It was brought to Traub for research and teaching purposes. It is here where Traub can be found in possession of the spirochetes used to make the agent later known as Lyme disease. Much later, we can see that Lyme disease spirochete was in fact related to the avian spirochete when comparing DNA from the flagella of the spirochete. It was published in a 1989 paper, quote, Shared Flagellar Epitopes of Borrelia burgdorferi and Borrelia anserina, unquote. Furthermore, striking relationships were likewise shown in a 1995 paper, quote, A Morphological Characterization of Borrelia anserina, unquote. Borrelia burgdorferi, Borrelia garinii, and Borrelia afzelii are the three species of Borrelia spirochetes known to produce Lyme disease. And these are most closely related to the parent strain, Borrelia anserina. This was reflected in several additional publications. And there's a footnote with them. Furthermore, the Lyme disease spirochete is maintained and carried by many different birds, further proving that Lyme disease spirochete came from Borrelia anserina. However, as it was, Borrelia anserina was not normally transmitted by hard-bodied ticks, nor known to infect humans. It was also not normally infectious to cattle, livestock, rodents, or mice. The spirochete would have to infect these kinds of animals if it were to maintain itself in the environment. It had to infect these animals to provide a continuous source of disease for ticks to draw from in the environment. These animals would be important reservoirs of disease in the targeted environment. That way, the ticks would have an endless supply of these pathogens to infect and reinfect them so they could keep infecting their human hosts. Franz Janel, that's J-A-N-E-L, had noted a researcher in 1912 who was successful getting the avian spirochetes to infect mice temporarily, but it would not maintain the infection. Traub would need the spirochete to infect not only the mice, but rodents, deer, livestock, and as many animals as possible that could help promote its survival and spread it in the wild. If the spirochete was to become an effective weapon, it would have to show broad-spectrum pathogenicity, and that is, infect a broad range of animals. That's where foot-and-mouth disease virus comes in. FMD contains surface proteins known as fusion proteins, which allow for it to penetrate cells by cell fusion, fusing to the cell tissue and incorporating the host carbohydrates into its own makeup. These fusion proteins are also found on a wide variety of other pathogens and viruses, such as LCM virus, Newcastle disease virus, influenza virus, among others. These viruses can then be used to adapt a pathogen to a new species of animal it didn't previously infect. In fact, we can show that one of Traub's Iranian protégés, G.K. Kanhai, was later taught this method by Traub in the 1970s, before Kanhai published a paper of his own using Sendai's virus and influenza virus to adapt a rickettsia of cattle to hamsters when it didn't previously infect hamsters. The mechanisms involved in this process are rather complex and esoteric, and for the sake of brevity, we will not be explaining the process in this book. In effect, these animal viruses could be used to adapt the avian spirochete to different animals that would be responsible for promoting its spread in the environment. This is the reason why viruses and viral proteins would be involved. After all, when Traub's expertise was diverse, he was mostly focused on virus research. The lipid proteins found on the Lyme disease spirochetes that caused immune tolerance were also present in LCM virus, FMD virus, influenza, equine infectious anemia virus, and many others that Traub worked with. Bovine papular stomatitis virus, the pox virus that Traub and Beller had earlier used to weaponize the simulant bacteria, Serratia marchesans, may have equally been used to that effect. The Borrelia burgdorferi spirochete has unusual plasmids in their outer surface proteins and are unique in regard to bacterial plasmids. Other researchers have suggested some of these linear plasmids consist of what are termed proviruses and prophages, remnants of viruses that infect a bacteria or spirochete without destroying it and can actually help promote its survival by adding additional factors in favor of the pathogen to evade the immune system and assist the pathogen in overwhelming the host. An unusual paper from 1947 also demonstrated that the parasitic nematode Trichinella spiralis could transmit the LCM virus to humans. And this may have been another agent that Traub put his efforts into, since it can contaminate livestock and wild animals like deer and other animals eaten by hunters. Interestingly, the late Harvard professor and one of the world's leading experts on biological weapons once cited a Russian bioweaponeer who relayed Russian bioweapons research to create a double pathogen, a bacterial pathogen like plague, harboring pathogenic virus like Venezuelan equine encephalitis virus that is activated by the antibiotic tetracycline, so that when the target becomes sick with plague bacteria and takes an antibiotic like tetracycline, it destroys the bacteria, but activates virulent VEE from within its plasmids. It is an interesting prospect to suggest that Traub may have already accomplished this. At any rate, the Borrelia genus of spirochetes, to which the agent of Lyme disease belongs, sheds a bewildering array of these immune-damaging lipids in small particles called blebs. So in some ways, there would be no need for genetically altering the Borrelia anserina spirochete any further if it could already infect humans, hard-bodied ticks, and all the animals responsible for its spread. Since it did not, the use of animal viruses to adapt the spirochete to a broad range of new hosts and hard-bodied ticks that feed on humans would guarantee its promotion in the environment. Over many decades, there would be a snowball effect where the agent is thriving exponentially more with each passing decade, making some think it was a factor of climate change rather than nefarious biowarfare activities. Okay, I'm going to have to stop there, and we'll finish this chapter, The Serpent Strikes. But you see what's going on here, folks. He's not just infecting individuals. He's infecting the environment. He's sending this virus out into places where deer and all kinds of little animals are going to catch it. And then when we go hunting or we go into the woods and we get infected, well, it's in the environment. And what are you going to do about that? Well, first thing we have to do is recognize the amazing, amazing problem that we face. And that's where we're at today. And I look forward to talking to you next time here on McDuff Lives.